What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined by my co-host, David Drogemeyer, and the birthday boy, John Kegley, on the show with us today. So a lot to get into, but first we have three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for over five seasons now, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, well, we have some fun news today because we are going to get into Derwin James and how he did in the Madden tournament, which was for a charity to help for the COVID-19 outbreak. So we're going to start with that and how he did in that tournament. Keenan Allen was in it as well as two ways the NFL is thinking about doing the draft coming up here on April 23rd. So we'll start there. And in the second segment, I saw an article from ESPN talking about the most impactful free agent signings for each team, but it really wasn't what I wanted to see. I thought I was going to get who is going to be the most impactful free agent when I opened it up, but that's not what it was. So I thought, hey, why don't we get into that and the least impactful player the Chargers have brought in as well. So we'll get into that in the second segment, and then we'll wrap the show up as we always do every Friday, Fan Mail Friday, with some voicemails. And we have some more good voicemails all about different stuff again. So we're doing pretty good on the voicemail front. So you're going to want to stick around for that because there's a lot of questions we're going to be answering. Get to talk about Jameis Winston. We haven't really talked a lot about Jameis Winston, but all that coming up at the end of the show. But let's go ahead and get into it. On Thursday, one Los Angeles Charger found a way to dominate on the football field without being able to actually go to one. And the NFL came out with two ways they might go about the NFL draft. This is Daniel Wade joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. On Thursday, it came out that the NFL was considering two different draft scenarios for teams. The league issued a memo obtained by NFL Network's Tom Pelissero informing all clubs the two scenarios currently being considered by the NFL as it pertains to this month's draft. So there are two options that teams are going to be having. They're not sure which one they're going to go with yet, but one option is for the clubs to operate out of their facilities subject to mandatory health and safety guidelines issued by Dr. Alan Sills, which will include limitations on the number of permitted club personnel at the facility and rigorous cleaning requirements. And the second option is for teams to operate completely remotely in personal residences with a clear prohibition on any number of club personnel gathering in one residence. So, David, we knew the NFL draft would not be able to go on as it was supposed to. We knew it wasn't going to be in Las Vegas, but now the league is floating out two different ways that, given the COVID-19 outbreak, that the NFL might conduct the 2020 draft.
In the first option, they brought up an example where the Saints said they had rented out like a brewery and that they were going to check everyone's temperature every time they came into the building. I don't know how practical that is going to be. I honestly think, with all of the different shelter in place orders all over the country, that the safest way to conduct the NFL draft is probably going to be the second option, where these teams and these organizations are going to be making selections out of their own residences. I think given the sensitivity about the COVID-19 outbreak, that's probably going to be the best plan of action. Obviously, the show must go on, but I think the NFL needs to do it as safely as possible.
And it just seems like that would be the safest route at this point with where things stand with, you know, national and local governments. But the other thing is if they go with the second option and do personal residences, then no club will be permitted to operate from any club facility. So if they go personal residences, nobody's allowed on the Chargers facility. And it definitely could come up with some problems. I mean, especially with timing being a big part of the NFL draft. If somebody's connection goes out or something, I think it's going to be pretty hard to try to set this all up, I mean, from scratch. But they don't have much time to do it. But let's get into some better news, because the Chargers got some fun news on Thursday because Derwin James was competing in a Madden tournament where eight NFL superstars competed in a winner-take-all Madden tournament for the ages, and the prize was a donation for COVID-19 relief and league-wide bragging rights. And Derwin James and Keenan Allen were both in it and had a tough first-round matchup where Derwin James took it 14-6. It was really close, but then James went on to blow out his next two opponents. He ended up beating DeSean Jackson 50-27, and then ended up beating Tyreek Hill from the Chiefs in the championship game 52-3. And David, we've seen a lot more virtual gaming with on-the-field football on the shelves, and this was a really fun way to kind of see this and see the fans' favorite Chargers in action. And it's always nice for your team to go in there and dominate the way the Chargers did.
And boy, did he ever. I mean, the last two games, he put 50-plus points on DeSean Jackson and Tyreek Hill. I mean, talk about a beating. But I also thought it was really nice to hear Josh Lewin, the former radio play-by-play guy of the Chargers doing the play-by-play for the Madden tournament. I thought that was a great touch. And obviously the important thing to remember is they were doing this for COVID-19 relief. So anything that is going to benefit the workers and get them more equipment, more money, more resources, obviously is going to be a positive thing. And to see a little bit of football, whether that be Madden or not, I think is a welcome sight in this climate. Anything to try to help out and also provide a little bit of entertainment.
Absolutely. And I mean, he really did dominate. It said Tyreek Hill had scored a combined 104 points in his first two games before meeting James the Juggernaut in the championship and only ending up scoring 3 points. But it was a fun way to provide some relief for people as far as entertainment and some financial relief to everyone struggling with this COVID-19 virus. So anything like this, we are here for it. And any way the NFL can do things like this to provide relief to the people that need it, we are 100% behind, and they should be exploring all avenues of that. But we do have two more segments to get into, getting into the least and most impactful free agents the Chargers brought in before getting into some voicemails at the end of the show coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into this second segment, getting into kind of an article I saw on ESPN about the most impactful free agents for each team, but the list didn't really answer the question that I wanted to know and got me thinking, who is the most impactful free agent that the Chargers brought in? So I thought we could all go through this and kind of talk about our most and least impactful free agents in our minds that the Chargers brought in. But first, as we are recording this April 2nd, it is John Kegley's birthday, so first of all, John, happy birthday. I know that, you know, you're excited to be able to record a show on your birthday because sports are your entire life. So I know that's kind of dragging your birthday down. But first of all, you know, just thanks for being on here. I'm sure you have some better things to do maybe, but happy birthday.
Thanks. It's nice to be reminded that I'm getting older by the second. I'm
older than me, old man.
Slowly deteriorating and getting closer to walking around with my own IV attached to my arm. Yeah, it's getting closer to that day.
At the basketball hoops with an IV in there, but you could still beat Lamblock. And I mean, that's really what's most important is, can I still beat Lamblock in basketball? And the answer is yes. I mean, we all know that.
Beat Lamblock with one arm tied behind my back.
Well, I'm glad that we get to have you. I mean, you're definitely, I mean, better spirits. I mean, you sound almost cheerful, which is not, you know, the John Kegley our fans have come to know and love. But first, before I get to who you think is going to have the least impact as far as the Chargers free agents, when you're looking at the, you know, main guys the Chargers have brought in or all the guys they've brought in, of course, it starts with Linval Joseph, Brian Bulaga, Chris Harris Jr., but also the Nick Vigils, Donald Parham, and also Darius Jennings. But out of those guys, obviously there's three guys kind of in a class of their own, but who do you think is the guy that is going to have the biggest impact for the Chargers this season?
Well, I'd have to go with Linval Joseph, and that's just because of how bad the middle of the line has been the past few years, how bad we've been at stopping the run, getting any penetration. I believe he's going to be the biggest impact. If you look at what was the weakest part of the team all the way up to what's going to become a more of a strength now, I think he makes the biggest impact. But believe it or not, I think Nick Vigil becomes more of an impact player because I'm pretty sure Denzel Perryman will get hurt again this year and Vigil will be playing a lot more snaps. And I think that's going to help a lot because you don't want to Jatavius Brown on your team. I think you'd rather have Nick Vigil.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously the one thing we can't predict right now are injuries. And if somebody goes down with an injury, it's going to mean some increased playing time for a guy like Nick Vigil, and maybe not as much for the other guys we mentioned. You know, maybe an injury would help, you know, a guy like Donald Parham have a little bit more assurance that he's going to make the team. But I think for the biggest impact, Linval Joseph, I'm glad that you picked him. I was thinking about picking him as well just because he's one of those guys that it might not show up on the stat sheet necessarily, but even on the stat sheet, I mean, his 3 sacks that he had last year were basically Brandon Mebane's entire career with the Chargers. And you're not necessarily hoping you're going to get a dominant pass rusher out of Linval Joseph, but we're just talking about the presence, because he just is such a presence on the interior. Even in a down season last year, you just know he's there and he makes his impact felt along the entire defense and really helps out the rest of the defense. And it has been such a soft spot. I mean, for the Chargers to have a guy that you know is going to, you know, stick his hand in the dirt and be kind of an immovable object in the running game, I mean, that's definitely going to be a sight for sore eyes. So I could absolutely see him being the biggest impact. If it comes with some pass rushing, you know, and he gets 4 or 5 sacks this year, even better. But I don't even think he necessarily has to hit those peak numbers for it to be a really impactful signing. But David, now I'm going to flip it over to you. John picked Linval Joseph as his biggest impact player in free agency that the Chargers have brought in. Who are you going with?
So for me, the most impactful player that the Chargers brought in for me was Brian Bulaga. And the reason for that is if you go back and look at the last 4 or 5 right tackles for the Chargers, they have all been trash. Okay. It's Sam Tevy. It's Joe Barksdale. It's Jeremy Clary. And then Shane Olivier. Shane Olivier was pretty decent, but all those other guys, not great. And they are average at the very best, at the peak of their performances. So you bring in a guy who has unbridled leadership, 9 years in the league, definitely a solid, one of the better right tackles in the NFL for a couple of years now. Also, you bring him in on a fairly affordable contract. I think his impact, you know, solidifying the right side of the line with Trey Turner is going to pay dividends, and it's going to be leaps and bounds, head and shoulders over what we've seen the last couple of years.
Well, and I think another thing that he's going to bring in, like we talked about Linval Joseph, things that don't show up on the stat sheet, is the fact that the Chargers, we don't know what we're going to get from Mike Pouncey. As far as, we don't know if he's going to be medically clear to play this season. He could still potentially retire. We just don't know about that. But this is an incredibly young offensive line. Another veteran that you have left in free agency with Michael Schofield. So after that, I mean, you're talking about guys like Dan Feeney, and Forrest Lamp as the veterans on this team, Sam Tevy, Trent Scott. I mean, these are really, really young players. So I think he is absolutely going to bring that veteran leadership, and having him already kind of have that connection with James Camp. And one of the things that we've seen with the Chargers offensive line is just how important chemistry is. And for these guys, especially in a, you know, shorter training camp, we have to assume, I mean, if there's a training camp at all, that all that time is going to be so limited. To have, you know, kind of a pre-existing connection there and have a guy that, you know, by just the way the rest of the offensive linemen for the Packers were treating, you know, his loss, that you're getting a great guy for all of those aspects, and a guy who is head and shoulders above who he is replacing in Sam Tevy, which is obviously what you've heard from me throughout all the shows, is just like, what is the gap between those two players? So I'm going to kind of go against them, and you guys name the top two. So I'll be the devil's advocate here, John, and I'm going to go with Chris Harris Jr. because in a vacuum, you're not getting as much of an upgrade at his position if you're talking about what you got from peak Desmond King or 2018 Desmond King. Chris Harris Jr. was still better than that in the slot, but at the same time, the gap there is nowhere near what the gap is between Trent Scott, you know, or Sam Tevy and Brian Bulaga. So from that aspect, I think it's not as much of a gap, but the one thing you are getting is, first of all, you're getting maybe the best slot corner in the NFL. And I know we like that with Desmond King, and he was up there at one point, but this is a guy that's truly dominant at his position. And not only that, but just a dog, a guy that you absolutely want back there, a guy who the rest of your defensive backs are going to feed off of. And I mean, one of the first guys to kind of out there and reassure Desmond King and kind of just saying, Pitbull, go eat, you know, it's just like, you'll be fine. You know, you're a guy that's going to come in and work hard, and the rest will work itself out. And of just a few words, he basically said that. But even though Chris Harris Jr. isn't as much of an upgrade over Desmond King as, say, Linval Joseph over Brandon Mebane and Brian Bulaga over Sam Tevy, he's really the only one I see that kind of grit from, the one that you don't want to meet in the street for a fist fight and all of those things. I think he's bringing some much needed grit and physicality for this secondary to go along with Derwin James to really make it formidable, John. So I think he really could be the most impactful player the Chargers brought in free agency.
I think him being there allows you to have more options. If you were to talk about which one has more meaning to it versus impactful, I think Chris Harris is the most meaningful signing, because now this means you have options. Can you put Chris Harris on the outside in the slot? Now what can you do with Desmond King? Now you have more options at corner. Can you do something else with Michael Davis? Maybe make him just depth. There's like so many options you can go with this now. Does this make you want to draft a corner? I think he gives you more options than these other guys do. Because with Brian Bulaga, there's one option you have. You're putting him at right tackle. With Linval Joseph, you're putting him on the defensive line there's a simple spot where these guys are going to go, but when you put them there, it's going to have a major impact compared to what you had last year. So I think Chris Harris is more of a meaningful signing than anything.
Well, I think he definitely gets versatility. And, I mean, obviously I'm doing this to be the devil's advocate, and I wanted to talk about all three of those guys. But let's quickly get into who we think might be the least impactful signing. So, David, out of everyone, I mean, I think there's a kind of a bottom tier of guys that could be the least impactful. But quickly, who are you going with?
So, for me, the least impactful, obviously, I think my pick is more of like the worst of the best, and it's Nick Vigil. And the reason for that is I don't think the Chargers are done addressing the linebacker position. I like the fact that they brought him in for depth. I mean, he's a solid linebacker. I mean, there's nothing flashy on tape about him. He's, you know, not going to go out there and really bring the big, you know, awesome sports center type of plays. But, you know, he's a solid depth piece, and he eats up tackles. He does get tackles a lot. But I think if the Chargers, you know, especially if they draft, you know, a linebacker early, that could really diminish his role. And obviously, he'll be good defense. He'll be a solid depth piece, like I mentioned. But, I mean, his role could definitely go down depending on what the Chargers do in the draft.
Well, but what the Chargers do in the draft, as well as the rest of these guys that are kind of on this bottom tier, I mean, as much as what the, you know, they might do in the draft, and they went and talked about that in a press conference, saying that they could potentially bring somebody in and then move Drew Tranquil to the other side at weak side linebacker. So that would obviously, you know, make that path to being impactful a little bit muddier. But if there's an injury, it could also improve how impactful he is. But for me, the two guys, John, are the two guys that are the least likely to make the roster when things are all said and done, like Darius Jennings and Donald Parham, because Donald Parham is a guy that's from the XFL trying to make the leap. He was originally an undrafted free agent. And Darius Jennings has had time in the league and has also spent years away from the league. But these are the two guys that I think are the least likely to make the roster out of, you know, the six guys that we've talked about here. And like we talked about before with David, I mean, what if they, you know, sign a receiver or a corner that's a really good kickoff returner? You know, then that path gets a little bit muddier, John, because that's really all somebody like Darius Jennings brings to the table. And with Donald Parham, I mean, making that transition, it's just it's impossible to tell, because this is the first time we've seen somebody trying to make the jump from this new version of the XFL to the NFL.
I do know that Darius Jennings drops a lot of balls as a receiver and is basically just your strength as a kickoff returner, and that's it. And two things with that are, is if you're going to have a really good defense like we're expecting to, you're not going to have that many kickoff returns. And even if you do get a kickoff return opportunity, how many of these are going to be kickoffs that are touchbacks, and how many are going to be kickoffs that are returned? There's not that many returns anymore with these new rules. You don't get many kickoff returns. It's not like the Darren Sproles days where having Sproles meant something. Nowadays, having a kickoff returner just means you're hoping you have a chance at getting the ball from the goal line to the 27-yard line. Like, that's the best. That's what you're hoping for if you return the ball. But if you don't, you get to the 23, coach is yelling at you saying you should have kneeled it. Stuff like that is going to make this guy not impactful at all in my mind. I think the best thing he's going to do is maybe be a punt returner if you want to transition him to that. That's like the best he could possibly do for your team.
His lack of versatility doesn't really do him very well. He's a one-trick pony, and if someone comes in that can do multiple things well, he's probably going to find himself packing his bags.
And like we've talked about, he doesn't bring much value as a receiver, so he has to kind of be the kickoff returner. And, I mean, punt returning, you would definitely want to give it a shot, but he hasn't done that in the NFL either. So a lot of uncertainty there. So I think that's probably the right pick for the least impactful, or the one that's most likely to be that. But we do have one more segment to get into, because we haven't started our voicemail segment yet, so we'll get into that coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into what we do every single Friday. It's Fan Mail Friday, and we have some voicemails to get into, some familiar voices or a familiar voice, and a couple of first-time callers that I'm excited to get into. But we have a lot to talk about and not a lot of time, so let's go ahead and get into it. First, we are going to Superfan Zach from Florida. Let's hear what Zach has for us this time.
Hey, guys, Zach from Florida. I know I call in a lot, but I enjoy hearing what you think of my questions. So, there have been people talking about us getting Cam Newton if he's healthy. Now, I don't know if his health will ever be back to what it was. And from what I've heard, it doesn't look like he's really into football anymore. But there is another option that is available, but I want to get your thoughts on if we should get this player. Now, I'm not strongly on Jameis Winston, but what would you think if the team brought him in, say, for a one-year deal, but the stipulations being that it's kind of like a prove-it deal, like if you prove that you can stay healthy and stay out of trouble, and you don't sign him to be a starter, but you sign him to be a backup. So maybe at most, $5 million signing, and just want to get your thoughts on possibly if the team should sign Winston to a one-year deal. Love to get your thoughts, and bolt up.
All right, well, this is something I don't think we've really talked about at all. I think one day I was like, hey, guys, should we sign Jameis Winston? And I just got a swift no from both of you guys. And I think, I mean, it's not maybe as easy as that, but it kind of is at the same time. So strictly talking about his performance on the field, because I think there's a bevy of reasons of off-the-field issues that you could potentially not want to bring Jameis Winston in. Doesn't seem like the best guy in general, but John, obviously, Jameis Winston is a guy that has a ton of talent. He led the league in passing yards last season with over 5,000, but also led the league in interceptions by a good margin. So, obviously, there's some talent there, but I don't think the LASIK eye surgery is going to fix it. But, I mean, it is a little surprising. I don't see as many people making the link between Jameis and the Chargers, which is probably a good thing. But I think all of us here, we're good on not taking that chance, even if it's a one-year deal.
Yeah, stay away from Jameis Winston. I'm sorry, I like my crab legs in San Diego and L.A. and all of Southern California, and I know he'll take them all. Stay away from him just for that reason alone. But he seems undisciplined with the ball. I don't know if that's because of the coaches he's had, because the Buccaneers haven't really had that kind of take over the locker room type of head coach that gets his team disciplined. But he just seems undisciplined with the ball. He throws it wherever he wants to, wherever he thinks they play right play. And I think that's why he has so many interceptions every year. But at the same time, when you do stuff like that, you're bound to get a lot of passing yards, but you're also going to get a lot of interceptions. Look at Brett Favre. Brett Favre was like that. Brett Favre had an amazingly strong arm to where he could fit the ball through the tiniest windows, and he did it so many times, but there was a lot of times where they were interceptions, and he'd have a bunch of like 4 interception games, but everyone remembers him for his touchdown passes. Jameis Winston does not have that luxury of having so many touchdown passes that he can get away with throwing interceptions like Brett Favre did. So I do not want to take a risk on Jameis at all with the way he's undisciplined with the ball.
Yeah, and I think best case scenario, you know, you could bring Jameis Winston in and maybe it's the season he kind of figures it out from a turnover standpoint. And, you know, his ceiling is definitely higher than Tyrod Taylor's ceiling, but not a chance that I would want to take, especially given the unneeded criticism that you might get for bringing him in. First of all, so I think that it's best if they stay away. But obviously, I mean, if you got the one season, he found a way to, you know, curve it, and he has 35 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Obviously, that's a pretty good quarterback. But I just don't know at this point how you could think about that. And I don't even know if he would be willing to go into any scenario where he's going to have to take, you know, $5 million or less than Tyrod Taylor makes. But we have more calls to get into. This one is Joe from New Jersey. Yeah, this is a first-time caller. He has a really good question for us, a couple of questions, but let's hear what he has for us.
Hey, guys. This is a new caller. This is Joe from New Jersey. That's right, New Jersey. Really far-off fan. Been a fan of the Chargers forever. Had a Chargers lunchbox, a metal one. Actually had all the helmets on the actual lunchbox. It was an NFL lunchbox. And I picked that team as my favorite team because of the Lightning Bolts going across. I think they have the best uniforms in the game. And so I kept up with them, even though I was so far away from San Diego at the time. Anyway, I'm a loyal fan, and I wanted to ask you a question. How did you guys become Charger fans, number one? And number two, I think we should go after Simmons in the first round and then either get Fromm or Hurts or some other quarterback later on in the draft. What's your feelings on that? I think passing up on Simmons would be a mistake, because I'd love to see him and our awesome safety play together and wreak havoc. Hopefully Tyrod Taylor can hold on the quarterback position, and then one of those two other quarterbacks could take over in time. What's your thoughts? Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. Well, I love the thought of you just having, you know, a Chargers lunchbox and having that, and, you know, that kind of creating your fandom and your passion for the team, especially living in New Jersey. But I mean, you didn't really miss out much with like the Jets, you know, at least you're not a Jets fan. I mean, it could always be worse. But John, I know that you have kind of an, you know, inspirational type of story of how you became a Chargers fan. And we've kind of all given our thoughts on Isaiah Simmons, and I haven't done enough research on the later on draft prospects at quarterback. I mean, I'll, you know, be perfectly honest. I've watched a lot of them, but none of them I'm willing to be like, hey, go get this guy. He's a steal. He's going to be the future for you or anything like that. So I'm more interested to hear, John, how you ended up becoming a Chargers fan or the biggest Charger fan.
I like the biggest Charger fan in there. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so growing up, I had a really tough childhood. I was bullied every day of my life from 4 years old to 16 years old. I got beat up by everybody, including girls. It was no friends, constantly rumors made about me with a lot of bad things where I'd get suspended and everyone would walk free, where I'm grounded at home all day. It was pretty rough. I basically gave up on life to the point where I tried to be like everybody else. They would leave me alone. Maybe they'd accept me, to the point where I threw a rock through a car window and I got away with it by blaming it on somebody else. Like, it was getting pretty bad. Started getting F's in school after getting A's and B's my whole life. And then one day my stepdad goes, hey, come watch this game with me. And if you don't like it, we'll leave you alone about football. Like, you tried, you won't do it. So this will just be the last straw. And I watched it and I loved it. And I was like, I got to watch more of this stuff. And one day I saw LaDainian Tomlinson play. It was opening day 2004 against the Texans. And I saw him play and I was like, dude, this guy is amazing. This guy's so much fun to watch. The stiff arm, everything. I got to see more of it. LT, I got to be like him. She goes, if you want to be like him, you know, you got to get good grades. He got him. That's why he's there. And I'm like, okay, you got me. Okay, you got me. I'll start trying in school. And I got to the point where I ended up graduating high school. But because of LT, I started watching the Chargers more and I grew in love with the team just from watching LT so much.
And now you're the biggest Chargers fan in the world. But yeah, that's obviously a really cool story. David, how did you become a Chargers fan?
So, I mean, for me, I was born into a Chargers fan family. I'm born and raised in San Diego, and, you know, obviously the Chargers were there for 56 years, and my family has been in San Diego for a very, very long time. I mean, generations after generations, probably three or four at least. So we were born. I was born a Chargers fan. I've been watching them ever since I could remember, since I was a kid. I was there through the 2-14 seasons, through the 4-12 seasons, the 14-2 seasons, the 12-4 seasons. I've been through it. I've been watching the Chargers for over 20 years. And I haven't always understood how the game of football was played or what was going on, but I have always watched the Chargers. I have been a Charger fan for life. It was a very tough situation when they left and moved to Los Angeles, but I continue to be a Chargers fan now, and I've already made the decision that I'll be a fan for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and we all grew up as Chargers fans. And for me, I mean, I'll keep it short, but for me, it was a way to connect with my dad. You know, kind of like John saying, his stepdad kind of took him in, and David saying he was born into that family. I mean, I grew up with my dad being a Chargers fan, and I really wasn't a football fan growing up, but I watched a couple of games with my dad, and I just remember wanting to be so excited about what he was so excited about. I mean, I didn't know the pain he was getting me into at that point, but I just always remember wanting to be like, oh, well, you know, if I cheer for that, I'll be kind of like my dad. And I got to watch Junior Seau play, you know, the greatest middle linebacker of all time, and that kind of inspired me to play middle linebacker in college, or in high school, and a little bit of junior college. So, I mean, that was my inspiration. But I mean, we all have our own stories, and there's a reason why, you know, football is so ingrained in all of us to some extent. But we're running long, and we still have one more voicemail to get into. This is another Zach. This is Zach from Kentucky, the head of the Justin Herbert fan club.
Hey, guys. First-time caller, Zach from Kentucky. I just want to say I'm probably the head of the Herbert at pick six for the Chargers. I just feel like the guy's off-script playmaking abilities and what he can do with his legs and his arm fits really well into what Anthony Lynn wants to do, run the ball, occasional pop pass over the top or a deep shot. I feel like he can do it all. Smart, high IQ, academic All-American. And I also just wanted to say, hashtag no love at six. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, well, I mean, we've all kind of gone back and forth on Justin Herbert. It does seem, and I've said this before, like that is going to be the pick. I don't think the Chargers are willing to move up to try and get to a... I think he makes the most sense for them as far as being the safest looking pick. And David, I know you know you, I've kind of gotten your thoughts on it, and you have issues with him kind of sticking to his first receiver and, you know, not always being the most accurate passer from time to time. But John, what do you think about Herbert? I mean, I'm with no love at six, so I'll definitely say that, Zach. I'm with you on that. I think that would be kind of disastrous to some extent. I mean, obviously anything can work out, but John, what would just be your general feelings if the Chargers ended up pulling the trigger on Justin Herbert?
I feel like Herbert's a big risk. I think he's a potential bust. If you look at like just different stats, like top quarterback ratings in college football, Herbert's nowhere near the top. And just a lot of the inaccurate passes I've seen from film from him, it makes it really hard to want to say this has got to be the guy. Mm-hmm. And plus he went to Oregon, which is a system school. And you can say all you want about how many touchdowns. He threw 95 touchdowns, second most in school history. Yeah, but how many of those were him making a play and not just benefiting off of the system like Jalen Hurts does? Me personally, Jordan Love would be a better pick. Now, just picking him at six, make it a reach? Yeah, maybe. But if that's definitely your guy, you should go with him. But at the same time, I'd rather just trade back, like even if it's like five spots, and get a couple more draft picks and get Jordan Love. I'd be okay with that.
And I'd be okay if the Chargers move back a couple spots and decided to end up going with Justin Herbert. I mean, if the Chargers want to target Jordan Love at the end of the first, I mean, I guess I could get my head around it. But I just think there's certain things. I mean, he was one of the least accurate passers last year from 6 to 10 yards. So that's the short passes. And 11 to 15 yards. So one of the least accurate passers on passes from 6 to 15 yards. So with what this Chargers offense is, the way they use the tight ends and guys like Keenan Allen and Austin Ekeler on short passes and plays like that, I mean, he doesn't necessarily fit what they want to do. And the Chargers hate turnovers, and he's one of the most turnover-prone quarterbacks in the country last season. So, I mean, there's definitely knocks on all of them. I think my biggest thing with Justin Herbert is just the fact that I have, you know, such a higher, you know, grade, so to speak, on Tua Tagovailoa that I think if you're picking them, you know, one pick apart or two picks apart, it would be much better to go with Tua, even at least as far as talent-wise, and you make your own distinctions on the health part of it. But I know this is definitely not the Herbert Love Club, you know, podcast, that we're not the highest on Herbert. I'm not the highest on Jordan Love just because of, you know, so many questionable plays that I saw from him last season after teams seemed to kind of adjust to what he was good at. But I mean, Herbert, there's a decent chance that, I mean, he turns into a really good quarterback. Teams love to see a physical prospect and turn that into what they want, and somebody might be able to do that. But I think, to me, I think right now the best case scenario that I could see for him is being Ryan Tannehill, which is fine, and you could run a Tennessee-like offense, but you don't have the same personnel as Tennessee has who kind of run that type of offense like you're talking about. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. We have gone very long. But next week, guys, make sure you tune back in with us, because Monday is Mock Draft Monday 5.0. It might take up the entire show. I'm not sure, because I'm going to have some changes. I don't know about these guys, but we're going to be doing a mock of the first five rounds, three separate five-round mock drafts coming for you guys on Monday. So make sure you come back in for that. But until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. Thanks to everybody who called in to make this a really content heavy show with the voicemails. If you guys don't know the number, it's 323-524-7924. Make sure you come back for Mock Draft Monday version 5.0 coming up next week. But until then, guys, take it easy and go Bolts.